This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. It's Earth Day, and today we're talking to a number of community leaders from around the state about their efforts surrounding the environment, climate change, and energy issues. We're joined now by Janet McCabe, Director of the Environmental Resilience Institute at Indiana University. Welcome, Janet.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks so much for having all of us on today, and happy Earth Day.
Yes, happy Earth Day. Well, at the top of the show, we mentioned that 13 Hoosiers were chosen for their contributions to their communities and the environment. Can you explain what the 2021 Hoosier Resilience Hero Program is?
Nothing would give me more pleasure. I just think this is awesome. So the Environmental Resilience Institute, which was created at IU in 2017 to really focus on environmental change and climate change around the state, has done a lot of different projects, and this is the one that I'm happiest about in many ways. So we realize that there are people all throughout Indiana who are doing things in their communities to help make Indiana a safer, healthier place, and are looking towards the future and understand that we need to be thinking about how we're living and working today if we want to have a healthy Indiana into the future, where we can grow the food we need and have clean water and have safe air and not be overcome by heat waves and drought and flooding and that sort of thing. And when we realized that, I think a lot of people think of Indiana as a pretty conservative state where a lot of people don't think climate change is happening or don't care or aren't doing anything. And it's just, there are so many people who are active in their communities. So we came up with this program that we called Hoosier Resilience Heroes. We use the word resilience very deliberately because what we're talking about is understanding the risks that we face and doing things to reduce those risks and make our state better able to withstand them. And so these are people that we take nominations and we think of people that we know. It could be people who are doing things in their jobs. It could be people who are doing things voluntarily. We always have more people than we can recognize, and they range from kids to senior citizens, academics, business people, advocates, educators. It's just wonderful. So this is the third year that we've done this program, and I'm really thrilled that we timed it around Earth Day and Earth Week. And I'm so thrilled that you guys wanted to provide an opportunity to talk to some of these heroes individually.
Yes, definitely. We'll be speaking with them a little bit later in the program. So a little bit more about this Heroes program that you have. When you said people would be nominated, and then how did you pick through those nominations? It sounds like you got a lot of people. Was that surprising?
Yeah, this is probably the most fun meeting I have every year. Is when we have a committee of people at IU who look at the nominations and make our decisions. So what we do is we put the word out in the early part of the year that nominations are open and there's a form that you can fill out. And then people have time to give us their nominations. And then we try to make sure that we have a variety of different types of people. We want diversity geographically, demographically, in terms of age, and a variety of where people come from. So I think every year we've been able to feature people who work in the faith community, for example, or students, people who work for local governments, people who are academics. And so we have it's a group process, and we all sort of say the ones that we think ought to be recognized. We've had people nominated more than 1 year. And so that's pretty significant. Several people this year, we had more than one person nominate them. So that's another indication that these people are really impactful in their communities. So they're all worthy. I'll just say that. And I hope that the people who are nominated this year and didn't get chosen will get nominated again another year.
If you have any questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. So I'm curious, is there a challenge in getting people to do things for the environment? Is this one way, this program, to sort of encourage people to get involved?
I sure hope it is. I think when people see that their neighbors and friends and the people they go to school with and the people that they work with or go to church with are doing these things and not only are making a difference, but are getting so much personal satisfaction and pleasure out of it. And I think you'll hear this from the four heroes you're going to talk to. It's not a hardship to do these things. It's incredibly satisfying. We all feel like we're making a difference in our communities. And, you know, I think that's a very Hoosier way of looking at the world. We're practical. We care about our communities. Hoosiers care deeply about Indiana, about their communities, and they want them. They care about their kids. Environmental change and climate change, this is about families and safe communities. And that's very Hoosier. So I think it's important for us to see those examples and to hear from people. So that is one of the reasons that we think the Hoosier Resilience Heroes Program is a really important one for us to promote.
And I also want to talk, Janet, about the work that you do. You're with the Environmental Resilience Institute. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to. So the Institute was founded in 2017. It was part of President Megrabi and IU's grand challenge called Prepared for Environmental Change. This was a recognition by a number of people at IU that our environment is changing here in Indiana. And we can put aside arguments about why that's happening, although I think the science of that is clearer and clearer, and not very many people are disputing why it's happening. But it is happening. We're seeing much more frequent and serious flooding in Indiana. This is a huge deal. For farmers, it's a huge deal for communities. It's a public safety issue. Millions and millions of dollars lost in property damage and personal risk in floods. We're seeing more hot weather. And the scientists right here in Indiana, scientists at IU and Purdue have done these very localized studies where they can tell us what it's going to be like in 2050. Under different scenarios of greenhouse gas emissions. And just to give people a sense, you know, I live here in central Indiana, and I say I've lived here since the early 90s. I'm used to maybe 3, 4, 5 days a summer that are really, really hot. But if you look at the projections that the scientists have done in central Indiana and Marion County, we can expect a month or more of really, really hot days, like over 95 degrees, in not very long from now, a couple decades from now. And that, if you think about that, you know, your first reaction might be, oh, that's great. I love hot weather. You know, I can go swimming. But then if you stop and think, no, we're not set up in the way our communities are built, the way our houses are built. We're not set up for that kind of climate. So people are realizing this, and the Environmental Resilience Institute and the Grand Challenge was all about recognizing that we have immense resources at IU, immense expertise, and that it's important. In fact, the responsible thing to do for IU to be helping Indiana anticipate and prepare for the kind of climate that we're going to have in the future. And that it's going to take people over just about every discipline you can think of coming together to work on these things. We need scientists. We need modelers. We need city planners. We need sociologists. We need lawyers. We need communicators. We need public health officials. All these people work together in an interdisciplinary way. And at a big institution like Indiana University, you can do that. If you decide we're going to focus on that. So the Environmental Resilience Institute was created to be a focal point to bring these researchers together to find new and important and impactful ways to help, but even more to be impactful. And I think a lot of times people think that academics just publish things in obscure journals that nobody will ever read. And they do that a lot. But my experience with the researchers that I've gotten to know at IU is they want their research to make an impact in the world. And so the Institute has really focused a lot on how do we get all this amazing talent and expertise and research into the hands of people in the community who need it in order to influence the way and help the way they do things. People like our heroes, but also people like mayors across the state, people I would refer to as change agents. And we're all change agents in some way because we all can make a difference in how we do things. But local officials have special abilities and responsibilities. So, for example, we've worked with dozens of communities now to provide them with resources and capacity in the form of IU externs to help them do greenhouse gas inventories. We have 17 communities around the state that have completed a greenhouse gas inventory, and we're working with 21 more this year to do that. You know, you can't manage what you don't measure, so doing that inventory is really important. And then a bunch of those cities have now done greenhouse gas reduction plans where they've set goals. We're going to, like they're talking about in Washington today at the summit, we're going to reduce our greenhouse gases. We're going to do our part by this much by this year. And this year, in addition to cities doing new inventories, we have about 10 communities who are actually starting to implement some programs that will make them more sustainable. They're learning how to be very friendly to solar energy, for example, or electric vehicles, which people are starting to pick up more and more, to look at the energy that they use in their wastewater treatment plants, which is a huge energy user. It's often a city's biggest use of energy and therefore biggest cost on their electric bill. And there's lots of things you could do to reduce those costs and reduce those greenhouse gases. So IU, through the Institute, is able to bring these resources to communities across Indiana. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear how much is really going on all across the state, north, south, east, and west.
Well, it definitely does sound like there's a lot going on and the future is being looked into. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us this afternoon, and we look forward to keeping up with all of the work that's coming out of the Environmental Resilience Institute. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Janet McCabe is director of the Environmental Resilience Institute at Indiana University. We'll be back after a quick break with four of the 2021 Hoosier Resilience Heroes. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soh. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. To mark Earth Day today, we're talking with some of the people chosen as 2021 Hoosier Resilience Heroes, an initiative at the Environmental Resilience Institute at IU. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. With us now are Liz Brownlee, a sustainable farmer in Southeast Indiana and the executive director of Oak Heritage Conservancy, Kathy Sipple, the Resiliency Coordinator for Earth Charter Indiana, Angel Akinleye, a senior at Riverside High School and student director of the Youth Environmental Press Team, and Miranda Frausto is a student at IUPUI and head youth leader for the Promise Project. Welcome. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Liz, I'd like to start with you. You're a farmer in Southeast Indiana. So tell us about your farm and what it means to be a farmer. I feel like we don't hear this term that often anymore.
Yeah, we used to be the majority. Now, there are more people in prison than there are farming in this country. I call myself a sustainable farmer because I'm focused on caring for the land. But I do that by way of my farm. So my husband and I moved home to Indiana about 7 years ago and took over my family's corn and soybean farm to turn it into a livestock operation. We raise sheep and chickens and pigs and turkeys out on pasture, focus on ethical treatment, and graze in a way that sequesters carbon. And then we sell that meat locally so that people aren't shipping their meat all the way across the country. This is year eight of our farm. So it seems to be working, which is pretty excellent. It's a tough row, right, to have a small business, and especially a farm in the face of the changing climate. But we do love it.
Well, I have to say there's a fantasy a lot of us city folks have about having a farm and getting animals. Is it as easy as it sounds?
Parts of it are easy. I would say you should find a farm near you and just go do a work trade with them for the day and get your hands dirty and have some fun and give them a little help. You can like scratch that itch without going all in right away and see what you think of the idyllic version.
Right. And can you tell us just real quick, what is sustainable farming for those who may not know what that term means?
For sure. So when I think of a sustainable farm, I think of farms that are not just looking at their economic bottom line, but they're actually thinking about, if you can picture a three-legged stool, where one leg is economics, right? Are you making any money? But another leg is the environment. Are you caring for the health of the soil? Are you adding fertility by doing things like, you know, adding compost and growing cover crops and building up the microbial life in the soil? Are you sequestering carbon? Are you selling food locally? So there's that environmental piece of it that thinks about, you know, carbon emissions, et cetera. And then there's another third leg, which is social sustainability. Are you caring for your community? Are you engaging people with their food and increasing food access in your community and building ties? So that's how I would describe it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And why is this important to you?
Oh boy, that's a great question. You know, I grew up on my family's farm here in Crothersville, and even though I was in 4-H and FFA all growing up, the message was clear, you know, get off the farm. This is no way to make a living. And so I pursued an education accordingly. After I graduated from Hanover College, I realized I actually really loved the way that working on farms and thinking about food helped me enact my environmental ethics, you know, because we vote with our fork three times a day. We can either vote for the planet or we can vote against it. And so farming is a way that I get to, you know, make change here on these 250 acres.
Well, thank you so much. That's a slogan I'm definitely going to keep in mind when I eat. Kathy, can you tell us, I do want to talk to you about Earth Charter in Indiana. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do there?
Yes, absolutely. I am a resiliency coordinator, and I am one of, gosh, I think there's 7 or 8 of us around the state. I also want to give a shout out to one of my fellow coordinators, Allison Zeidel. She is also a winner this year. So I'm really glad that we were represented multiple times. But Earth Charter Indiana was created in 2001 by John Gibson and Jerry King, and it's inspired by the Earth Charter Declaration at the Peace Palace in The Hague, Netherlands, in 2000. So the Earth Charter is a proclamation of fundamental principles for building a just, sustainable, and peaceful global society in the 21st century. And so I have been working with them for about 10 years, very part-time. As Janet said, it's not a hardship at all. It is what I would give my entire life to if we weren't such a small nonprofit with a, you know, small budget. But I think we make a lot of things happen in our corners of the state. Our executive director, Jim Poyser, really gives each of us a lot of leeway to work on whatever we think is going to be most impactful. And I have been in this particular role for about 2 years. And I ask that rather than be assigned to a particular city, which is where I live, is Valparaiso, Indiana, we operate as a region up here. So we, you know, we don't have one city up here that is the majority of the population. It really is pretty distributed. And so, gosh, one thing I love that Earth Charter does is they host an annual climate leadership summit. And I met Janet several times over the years, but one of the you know, really nice interactions we had was at the summit that was held in 2019 in Goshen. So Goshen was a little bit closer to my corner of the state, and for the first time we had a critical mass of people from my area who went to it. I think there were 9 or 10 of us. And we got to interact with Janet and Andrea Webster, who is one of the people that she works with at ERI. And we learned all the resources that they had for communities such as ourselves. And so we invited them to come to a climate action blitz that we hosted in Highland, Indiana last February, right before COVID started. It was fantastic. People were so excited. And we all, there were 65 people there, despite a snowstorm. We had 65 people show up, 100 registered from 13 different communities across Northwest Indiana. and they listened to what ERI could offer. And we all said, you know, let's go forth from here, go back to our communities and ask them to declare, you know, climate resolutions and take action. And then, of course, what happened right after February 15th, COVID. So we kind of reconfigured and kept meeting on Zoom almost weekly for several months, probably 4 or 5 months throughout the summer, and said, what could we do? Let's get into this greenhouse gas emissions inventory. As Janet said, it's kind of step one, the measuring part of what they do. And we successfully, I want to say we, because it's not like I could be a hero myself. I had such broad support from a citizen group called Northwest Indiana Region Resilience, NERPC, which is Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission. There was another group, Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission, and all kinds of individuals gave support to this momentum, such that we were able to get three counties, Lake, Porter, and LaPorte counties, as well as 11 cities within those counties, to join this year's cohort. So we were awarded 2 interns from Janet's program, and we were able to raise additional funds to hire 4 other interns. And we just met for the first time with all 6 interns yesterday. We're going to be getting started and doing the first step of the measuring beginning in, well, next month.
Wonderful. So it sounds like this program is going to be quite helpful for you guys. I do want to talk to Angel real quick. You're a senior at Riverside High School. What was your reaction when you found out you were chosen for this 2021 Hoosier Resilience Hero program?
I was very surprised. I was so grateful and honored to be chosen and to stand here today with all of the amazing, wonderful people who have done work from around Indiana.
So can you tell us a little bit about your project or what you were nominated for?
Yes, I think it's a couple different things, so I'll go into it. So I am the director of the Youth Environmental Press Team based with Earth Charter Indiana. And so we are focused on lifting high school journalism. And so we look for articles around the state dealing with climate change or the environment, and then we publish it on Environmental Reporter, Indiana Environmental Reporter, and from there to get more wide range. And I feel like journalism is so important, and having a good set of journalists coming up and focusing on climate is so important. Also, I'm part of the Mayor's Youth Leadership Council and Confront the Climate Campaign, which is a grass-led student organization focused on trying to pass a climate declaration statewide. And I'm also trying to pass a school declaration at my school. And today is actually a really historic day for students all across Indiana, because Shortridge High School was the first high school in Indiana to pass a climate declaration. And I'm actually sitting at Shortridge High School right now. And those are the different things I've been working on.
That's wonderful. And thank you for including us in this historic moment. So tell us, you know, when did you get interested in issues around the environment and climate change?
I've always been really interested in social justice causes. Oh, I think I'm having some technical difficulties with muting. So I've always been interested in social justice causes. And when I was a freshman, I was freelancing in journalism, and I got connected to Jim Poizner through a friend. And so I started doing freelance, going around the state of Indiana, reporting on climate. And then from there, I started volunteering and learning about all of these different amazing organizations and all of the amazing things that students are doing across the state.
Wonderful. Well, we'll check back in with you in a moment. Miranda, you're a student at IUPUI. You've been involved with work around these issues for years now. Where did your passion come from?
That is a good question. I think I grew up always having like an interest in the environment, but it wasn't until high school where I really understood like what my impact could be and like what I could do on the individual level to make an impact. And that's when I started with the Promise Project, which I was the head youth leader for and worked with some wonderful youth, and Leslie Webb, who was our adult mentor, to work with our city councilors to pass the first youth-led climate resolution in Indiana back in 2017, which was a process that took, I think, about 2 years, if not more. But it really gave me my first experience. And this is like what can, this is the possibilities that are endless in sustainability and climate work.
And what is the project that you were nominated for? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, similar to Angel, I think there were maybe a couple of different things. One of them, of course, being the Promise Project. And then 2 years after that resolution passed, I also worked as the Indiana Climate Fellow for the City of Carmel, which was a great chance for me to continue my work from the resolution and implement it in an internship role where I conducted the first greenhouse gas inventories for the City of Carmel. Like has been mentioned, is the first step in doing climate work so you know what emissions you're managing. And then also started the work on the climate action plan as well. And I also work at the IEPRI Office of Sustainability, and I have been for the past 4 years, and it's been a wonderful experience. And I really am so grateful to them for all of the wonderful lessons I've been taught in my college career. And I work in currently in food recovery efforts and food insecurity.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. If you have questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Liz, I want to get back to you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Hoosier Young Farmers Coalition?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the Young Farmers Coalition is basically a loose group of folks who get together to celebrate and commiserate and trade ideas. So these are sustainable farmers all around the state, and we're called Young because we're in our first 10 years of farming. So it's not an age thing necessarily. So the key thing that connects us really is that we're focused on building small businesses that care for the land and get food to people, right? But that means we're urban farmers and we're in rural spaces. It means we're kind of all across the political, gender, demographic spectrum. It's pretty uplifting work because you can see that you're not the only one trying to do this in your community, that there are people all around the state who are really kicking butt. I mean, the farmers are they're doing it. It's a real pleasure. We just had our application period for our fellowship program. And basically every year we have an anonymous donor who gives us funds so that we can select seven fellows a year. And it's sort of like the Heroes program in that it's this really joyful chance to see what are farmers all around the state doing. Because to be selected as a fellow, you have to be in at least year three of your farm and be making it and ready for a next big step forward with your farm. And so the people who are applying are just making real waves in their community in a positive way. And then they get $5,000 to implement a project on their farm. So it's pretty neat to see the progress they can make with a little bit of support.
Wonderful. Well, Kathy, you your work is region-based. You were kind of mentioning earlier. Are there some of the challenges? Are there some challenges with some of the work that you're doing, and in particular with the pandemic? Did it affect anything?
Well, I think the shifting to a virtual and to some extent allowed me to do more with my very part-time number of hours per month that I'm allotted. So we tried to just, you know, live into it and do the best that we could. And honestly, Zoom was our friend. I didn't spend so much time in my car going around to different communities to meet. And I think it did encourage us to really think as a region and work as a region. One other thing too, that I can't prove that this had something to do with it, but I really went out of my way to learn to become a better facilitator during that time because so many people were suffering from Zoom fatigue. So this is a little outside of maybe climate, but I think social climate, you know, how we interact with one another and the web that we weave in order to create these community solutions is really important. So I started studying this form of facilitation called sociocracy. And it's a really great way for every voice to be heard. So people who might normally be shy and in the background on a Zoom call, they get called out. And we develop proposals and everybody's gifts are honored. And honestly, I really think that was my secret sauce that helped me be an effective facilitator with my awesome, dynamic volunteer team as well.
And I wonder also, I mean, since we're talking about Earth Day, did we see less emissions from cars? Everybody's on Zoom, or did the internet pollute the environment? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Janet could probably speak to this better than I could. I don't have the data ready, but I know that I put very few miles on my car over the last year.
Yeah, I would say that. Go ahead.
There was a pretty significant decrease in traffic in the early days of the pandemic. But I just heard one of our amazing IU scientists, Gabe Filippelli, talk about the fact that even in the year where the economies across the world were basically shut down, we reduced greenhouse gases by about 7%. So that's not very much. But it is an opportunity for people to think about how do we do things in a kinder way. And I bet we'll use more virtual gatherings in the future because we've had this experience.
Yes, and I won't complain. I enjoy not having to leave the house. We'll be back after a quick break for Earth Day today. We're talking to four recipients of the 2021 Hoosier Resilience Hero Program, chosen every year by the Environmental Resilience Institute at IU. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. And we are back from a quick break, and apologies for the technical issues. This is the world of pandemic talk shows. This is what we do here. We become IT professionals and talk show hosts. We are discussing environmental issues in Indiana. With us, we have four people chosen as 2021 Hoosier Resilience Heroes, named each year by the Environmental Resilience Institute at IU. As always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. With us, we have Liz Brownlee, a sustainable farmer in Southeast Indiana and the executive director of Oak Heritage Conservancy, Kathy Sipple, the resiliency coordinator for Earth Charter Indiana, Angel Akinleye, senior at Riverside High School and student director of the Youth Environmental Press Team, and Miranda Frausto, a student at IUPUI and head youth leader for the Promise Project. Miranda, you've done work recently on food insecurity. What have you seen that's successful?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. So food insecurity is a really large issue on the IUPUI campus. Even before the pandemic, it was 43% of students were facing hunger, inability to purchase groceries, and even just have food that was nutritious and healthy. So through the campus kitchen, which is what I'm the co-director for currently, we provide food for students. We provide nutritious meals for them. And because of the pandemic, we assume that, you know, those numbers went up of food insecurity. So we had to change our tactics a little bit as to how to reach students since they weren't coming to campus as much. And, you know, the situation in general is just was more difficult to reach students than it ever was. So we actually started a drive-through program called Paws Express, where every Tuesday we give out DIY meal kits to students. So not only a meal that they can cook at home that's vegan, gluten-free, healthy, all of those things, also giving them the culinary experience to learn how to make food.
Wonderful. And so we've heard from people that the pandemic has had a big impact on food insecurity issues for people in some communities. How have you seen COVID-19 change things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, personally speaking from a student and talking to other students, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that, you know, have lost jobs, different opportunities that really limited them and their, you know, like financial stability. And that, of course, directly correlates to food insecurity and the ability to purchase those groceries. And, you know, like I mentioned, students, we have a pantry on campus where they can get free food, but transportation has just become more difficult because of the pandemic and students aren't even coming to campus to access those resources, which is why with the drive-through program, we were hoping to alleviate some of those barriers that exist.
And earlier you had mentioned that you worked on some legislation or some climate change efforts. What was that like trying to get things passed? I'm always curious to hear what younger folks think, because, you know, the older folks have been around trying to pass things for a long time and fresh eyes are often needed.
I'm glad you asked that question. And honestly, I think there is such a power to youth speaking about these issues. I think, like you mentioned, like having that fresh perspective from the youth really did make all of the difference. You know, I don't think when we met with Mayor Brainerd and all the city councilors that they often get a group of, you know, young people in middle school and high school talking about these very serious issues and wanting to pass a resolution. And like, to your question, we passed a climate resolution, officially called the Climate Resilience and Recovery Resolution, that stipulated the City of Carmel, we want you to be a leader in climate action through the powers that you have. And these are the sorts of things that, you know, we hope that you are able to do, starting from the baseline greenhouse gas inventories to lining up climate action plan, which is, okay, these are our emissions. How are we going to reduce them? These are the exact actions that we're going to take, and we're going to yield these results by this year, like Janet had mentioned earlier.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. Angel, what was it like on your end getting involved in efforts at school?
It was really great. My school is really supportive. We have an emphasis on community and making sure that we do things together and involving students to push really the future, because students are not just the future. We're right now. And I feel like bringing in so many different voices, minorities and everyone who is effective with climate change.
And what was your experience like working with other leaders at school and even, you know, I guess, like principals or people in higher positions at school? Do you feel like they listen to students?
I feel like they do. I feel like if they don't, then they will definitely start listening, because we have so many great things to say and change that we want to bring. And all of my interactions have been wonderful, bringing change, working together. And I'm so thankful for every single person that I've worked with so far.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Kathy, I want to talk to you about a podcast that you've had for a number of years. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you started it?
Yes, absolutely. It's called 219 Green Connect. It's been around for over 10 years. That was kind of when people were still using green as a buzzword, more more often than sustainability or resilience. And so I just kind of went with it. I wanted people to recognize that I was talking about the 219 area code. And I just started having great conversations with people that were trying to do wonderful things. And I realized I was ill-equipped to repeat those conversations back completely. So I thought, why not record it? And then it's there forever. So there are probably 90, 95 episodes over the last 10 years. It's not, you know, an all the time thing, but I just invited, before we started, my fellow heroes to be on there. I'd love to repeat their story. And frankly, anybody that's in the listening audience, you know, I'd like to help do exactly what you're doing, Miriam. I appreciate you using this medium to spread the word about these great initiatives.
Well, thank you. And 90 episodes, that's a lot. That's not a small number.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, sometimes I go back and listen to it again. There's some technical stuff, and I'm not really a numbers person. So for me to be able to hear it fresh and then be able to share it, it's really helpful. And honestly, it started a little bit as a dare. I used to be a social media trainer, and somebody said, well, it must be easy for you to teach social media because you're on it all the time. And it's easy for you to get thousands of Twitter followers. But what if you were a nonprofit? And so I started it just kind of to see what I could do with zero budget and as a hobby. And it ended up being actually my passion and my favorite thing to do. And I've kind of grown my job to fit the passion.
That's really cool. And Liz, you're also working on a podcast with interviews with farmers from across the state. What got you started?
Yeah, I'm absolutely going to pitch Kathy on re-airing or featuring some of these stories. The podcast is in some ways a symptom of the pandemic. So the Young Farmers Coalition, we had a grant from Indiana Humanities to host a series of storytelling events on farms all around the state. And the idea was to bring the public onto sustainable farms and have the tours co-led by a farmer and a humanities scholar, to have people thinking about how food and farming and our history on the land really weaves into all parts of their day and their lives. But all that got canceled with the pandemic. And so we had planned to have a little bit of a podcast component to that, but now we've really leaned into that piece of the puzzle. So we actually had a Valpo professor and an alum interview 16 farmers from around the state, trying to capture their stories, because what we want to do, the whole goal of these farm tours was to really update the narrative about food and farming in Indiana. Most farmers, most people think of a farm and they think of like a 58-year-old white guy in his plaid, on his combine. And I say this as a white woman in my bib overalls, literally right now, right? Like, there's a stereotype. But the reality is that there are a lot of different people farming in a lot of different ways in Indiana, in ways that are good for the climate, in ways that are good for our communities. And a lot of us are women. A lot of the growers are in urban spaces. They're BIPOC farmers. They're first-generation farmers. And so we need to update the stories that we tell about food. And so that's the idea of the podcast. And that'll be coming out later this summer, and hopefully airing on as many places as we can get the stories out.
That's really interesting. You're mentioning about the different farmers and makeup and the stereotypes. Is there anything you think would surprise people who have those stereotypes in their head about farmers?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, probably just about every sustainable farmer I meet has some aspect to them that just kind of makes you say, what? These are very interesting people who are, you know, they're doing all sorts of things ranging from, you know, serving on their school board to president of their food council and pushing for, you know, different policies in their communities, to people who are raising kids while farming full time and making a living as a small business owner. It's pretty impressive to see the group of folks farming around the state.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Miranda, what are you thinking about when it comes to Earth Day? You know, as we get ready sort of to wind down on the program today, what are some of the things that you hope people take away and maybe do differently?
Yeah, that's a great question. On Earth Day, I think it's so important to reflect, like has been mentioned, like the power of an individual, even like youth, like have such a big impact in climate work and sustainability. So never underestimate what you're able to do in your household, in your community, in your local government. You can do whatever you want. Just put your mind to it. If there's something that bothers you, you can find the solution and you have the power to change it. And there's a bunch of other people around you, I'm sure, that want to help you with that. And also, of course, just really thinking in the system of sustainability. With Earth Day, it does focus on the environment, but sustainability in general, like Liz mentioned, is the societal impacts, the economic impacts, and putting all of those aspects together is what makes sustainability solutions that are effective and long-term.
And Angel, I want to ask you that same question. What are your, I guess, words of wisdom for the rest of us? You know, you're out there doing this, you're pushing for change. What about somebody who's just like, oh, I don't know if what I'm going to do is going to make a difference?
To that, I would say that every small thing that you do makes a difference. Even if someone's not looking or someone's not watching, or that you're not named a hero or you don't get recognition, everything that we do on this earth has an impact, not on just each other, on so many different species across our earth. So many people are impacted by just the small things that we do, and really people coming together to make change is so powerful. And that's why I'm so grateful to be on here today and be on the radio.
And we're really appreciative that you took the time to speak with us today. Liz, what are some small steps people can take? I mean, I guess somebody could have an urban garden or something, but from your experience, what is some small step?
You know, one thing that's nice about food is that it really does connect us, and everybody's got to figure out how they're going to think about food. So there are a million actions that you could take on Earth Day today. Make a plan with a friend to meet at the farmer's market on Saturday. Challenge a restaurant where you normally go to buy more local products, and follow up with them about that. Grow some food, in a planter box, in a bucket, in a small garden space that you have. Try something simple, right? That is forgiving. Lettuce, kale, zucchini, things that are harder to mess up. That's what I stick to in my garden, 'cause I'm an animal person, not a vegetable person. And, you know, the other thing you could do is check out what a nearby community or if you're in the city, what your city is doing with food councils. They're working on the policy level to improve food access, to make sure that nutrition is a focus in our schools, and to support farms that are trying to grow their businesses and feed more Hoosiers. We're a, you know, a state that is one of the top agricultural producers in the country, but we import 90% of our food. And that has a huge impact on our climate. So the more we can buy locally and support food staying in Indiana, the better.
Wonderful tips. Kathy, what about you? Any tips and advice for folks?
Absolutely. Youth have been mentioned quite a few times, and I'm really proud that Earth Charter Indiana has a pretty robust set of offerings under their youth programs. If you want to visit that website, it's earthcharterindiana.org. There's a climate camp that I believe will be at least partially virtual this summer. And that would be a great way for parents to get their young people involved, since, you know, the young are going to inherit this whole climate situation. And there are lots of other programs there too. If you're an older Earth activist, and maybe even if you think you've done everything and you've tried everything, challenging yourself by going to Project Drawdown, drawdown.org, they have chronicled the top 100 climate solutions that, if done to scale, would not only reduce, but actually reverse emissions by 2050. And number three is reduce food waste. We could all do that. You know, so just when you feel like giving up, look at it through fresh eyes, through the math, and dig in. You know, there's also a site called, I think it's Eco Challenge, and there is a drawdown focused Eco Challenge. So if you want to get a team together at your school, at your church, in your neighborhood, that's a fun way where you can see in aggregate what all of your small changes are making collectively. And that can really open your eyes that you can do one more thing and really stretch yourself.
Well, I guess that wraps up our show for today. Thank you all so much for joining us. Liz Brownlee is a sustainable farmer in Southeast Indiana and the executive director of Oak Heritage Conservancy. Kathy Sipple is the resiliency coordinator for Earth Charter Indiana. Angel Akinleye, a senior at Riverside High School and student director of the Youth Environmental Press Team. And Miranda Frausto is a student at IUPUI and head youth leader for the Promise Project. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Thurman is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. Join us tomorrow when we talk about education funding, COVID-19 spread in schools, and defending Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.